Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 147 on marketing, meetups, and apartment syndications with Adam Adams. On today's episode, Adam and I begin by discussing how to build and run a top real estate meetup in your market, and we also dive deep into apartment syndication, including risk management, market selection, one of my recently favorite topics, and proper management technique, and of course, we're going to touch on raising capital. I had a blast recording this episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's get right to it. Mr. Adam Adams, welcome to the REI Diamond Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Tough guest to get on. Another podcaster, and I'm sure you relate just like me. We are busy running our businesses, running the podcast, running everything that we have going on. And to make time like this, shut the door and give us, you know, an hour or so of your time and wisdom here, I appreciate it. And I welcome you to the show there. So where about in the world are you recording from today, Adam?
I'm recording from wintry, snowy Conifer, Colorado. It's beautiful today. The snow is just gorgeous.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we are, I am in Chicago here, and we have a warm, wet, rainy day here, but it's been winter weather all the way. But man, I see the photos online, some of my friends that live in Colorado, and they have the four-wheelers out, and they had the plows out for the driveway, and they have the snowmobiles and stuff, and we don't see much of that here in Chicago at all. It's not that kind of snow, but it sounds cool. So Adam, for people who don't know who you are already, would you mind giving us kind of the backstory, how you got to where you're at today, and a little bit of what your business looks like currently?
Absolutely. So the backstory and a little bit about what the business looks like now is I'm originally from Utah, so not far from Denver, Colorado, same type of patterns, but I grew up in Utah. My stepdad, who I grew up with, was or is, I guess, still a general contractor and a real estate investor. So he makes as much money as he can doing his general contracting business, and he's been putting money aside for years and years and years. So when I was 8 years old, I remember he started teaching me a little bit about getting involved in real estate. So that's where I kind of got my start, although I rejected it for years. I rejected it for years. That's what old, boring people do, Dad. I'm an 8-year-old, I'm a 12-year-old, I'm a 16-year-old, I want nothing to do with it right now. And so he wanted me to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He tried to have the whole family play cash flow. And I'll tell you, if he brought that book out and said, let's play a cool game, I would have played it. But he didn't sell it right to me as a father. He was like, this is going to teach you how to be an adult. And I was like, doesn't sound fun. So it didn't happen until college, 2005. My dad bought one of the pieces of land that he buys during the tax deed auctions in October in Utah. He bought this thing for $100. He said, if you don't want this, you know, give it to me. I'll give you $100 to do a quit claim deed. The guy said yes. And so my dad then gave it to me for Christmas in 2005, and then he made me pay that $100 because his CPA was going to ream him if I didn't pay $100 for it. So as a college student, I had to figure out where that money was going to come from, and then I finally found it, and I owned a piece of America. I owned real estate, and that was really where it started. And 2 years later, in 2007, I sold it and made a decent amount of money from holding on to it for 2 years. And I just got mad at myself. Truthfully, I was so angry that I made so much money on this. And my dad had really been trying to help me do this since I was young. And I was like, why didn't I do this sooner? And so I said, give me that book Rich Dad Poor Dad. I read the whole thing. It took me about 4 weeks, and I started getting into apartment investing in 2008, and it happens to be right before the crash. So I did own an apartment during the crash, and it was fun, to say the least. But if we could just fast forward another dozen years to around now as we're recording. I now own 1,400 units, and the cash flow is incredible. It's everything that I always wanted it to be. And, you know, I can say that I'm out of the rat race because my bills are finally totally taken care of by passive income. But I am still working pretty hard. I enjoy it, and I'm working pretty hard. But if I wanted to retire, I think I have the option to retire now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I don't think I've ever shared on the air or anything, but I had a kind of a similar experience. My dad was doing like buying some rentals, and he was starting to figure out real estate investing. And I was probably the same 8 or 9 years old, helping him out on the job. He was doing kind of the electrical contracting thing. So we're like sanding drywall. He was not teaching me the buying, the selling, and negotiating the contract part, because I don't think he had really figured that out. He was teaching me more of the run some electrical wires, change out the fixtures. Here we're hanging these cabinets side of it. But it was my dad when I finally got back around to it, 2006, read Rich Dad Poor Dad. I was 26 years old. I'm like kicking myself, just like you said, because he handed it to me while I was in high school, and it was the same reaction. No, I'm not reading this thing, my dad, Rich Dad. I got the Poor Dad. I'm putting that thing on the shelf. and then he kind of saw the opportunity for me. We went to a couple of the Get Rich in Real Estate seminars, and like he sort of pushed me along and didn't go to all the seminars with me. He's like, this is going to be your thing. You do this, Dan. This is for you. And you know, here we are a dozen or so years later, and, you know, 180 deals or so closed for the year. It's been a phenomenal ride, especially for the last 6 or 7 years. But, man, I wish I would have figured that out, you know, at an earlier age. I mean, thank God I did when I did and you did when you did, because we have, like, been really blessed so far. But I that's cool. I'm glad I'm not alone in, you know, ignoring that. And when I tell my daughter, yeah, why don't you come work for Diamond Equity? She's like, Dad, real estate's boring. I don't want to do that. She's exactly what you said is what she said, and she's on her way to college next year. So we'll see how that works out. But anyway, let's talk about the real estate that you've put together. So you got a whole bunch of apartment units, and maybe we could talk about the evolution of your buying strategy. So I'm sure you bought that first one and didn't have the same set of rules or the same parameters or requirements, or you weren't looking for the kind of things that you were looking for that you did on that last deal that you most recently did here. Adam, can you talk about that progression and maybe some of the biggest lessons learned in how you select the real estate that you currently looking to buy, or like even the most recently ones that you own?
Absolutely. And in fact, with the real estate progression, it's changed a ton over the last 14 years, but I want to just give maybe three steps. And so in the beginning, it was pretty much anything I could get my hands on, anything that looked like it could make a dime. And in the middle, when I started doing apartment syndication and trying to grow that portfolio, I was in a mentorship program that talked about the 8-12-16, and what the 8-12-16, they call this the Holy Trinity. It's nothing religious. It's the Holy Grail for being able to buy apartments, as they say. So you want an 8% cap rate, and you want a 12% cash on cash in the very first year, and you want a 1.6% or 16. 160. There's a lot of ways to say it, but it's easier to remember by going 8, 12, 16. But 1.6%, it's called DSCR. It's a debt service coverage ratio. It's how much more than the mortgage are you making in passive cash flow. And so this was the standard that we were looking for. And in fact, my first three syndication deals followed the Holy Trinity. followed what my mentor told me I needed to look for. And I want to be honest with you that those three deals, although they are performing, one of them wasn't for a while and now it is, although they're totally performing and doing what we need them to do, all of our deals since then have been much better. And so the third step, you know, first it's just doing real estate because I really wanted to. So I tried everything. And then the second step is doing this holy trinity within multifamily investing. The third is really looking at a deal and underwriting a deal for the next few years. So in the first year, you just like a fix and flip, you can't make cash flow on a fix and flip like while you're working on it, right? But usually you're able to make a good dollar on it when it sells, when you buy, fix, and sell. And it's the same thing with a multifamily. So we've been recently looking at these deals and saying, what will this be able to accomplish over the next 3, 5, or 10 years? And, you know, just to kind of sum it up, we really look a lot at a 5-year picture. And if we can double our money in 5 years, we go in with $5 million in equity, we sell it for $8 million more than we bought it for, pay some things, you know, expenses, you'll double your money. You'll net that additional five. So it's really hard to go into all the detail without looking at this, but just since I know this is a podcast, just in general, the way that we're talking is if our cash flows can bring in anywhere from 5, 6, 8% average throughout while we are holding it. Also, we're paying off the principal balance for the mortgage. Also, we're increasing the value. So with all of those combined, we're looking to double our money and our passive investors' money in about 5 years. And so we no longer are looking for these 8, 12, 16. They're very difficult to find like that. But these days, deals are something that you have to create. They're not necessarily already there. So you've got to look and decide, is there a way to double our money in 5 years? And if there is, it's a project that we are willing to purchase.
Now, I'm going to make an assumption here, Adam. You talked about you have to create these deals. And I know I've been out here shopping and kind of window shopping. Personally, I don't have the time to run a syndication or pull the trigger on one. Or maybe the ones I'm looking at were kind of like not really the greatest deals and didn't excite me. But it's not a mission that I'm on, and it's not like where I'm dedicating my time. So, you know, anecdotally, I'm watching the market. It's more like 6.5 caps. It's being offered at a 6 cap, and it's settling at a 6.75 cap. So you're mentioning you have to create deals. Can you just describe exactly what you mean by creating a deal? Like, can I just go out there and create the deal? Obviously, I can't on anything that comes down the pike. You're looking for certain parameters, and you're driving value in certain ways. Would you mind just kind of like touching on what some of that entails?
Yeah, definitely. I'll try. So the first thing is, you know, when we look at creating a deal, it's really the root word for me to be creative, right? Create, to be creative, to be imaginative, to think a little bit outside the box. And what I'm saying is that on like the surface level, some properties, they don't look like they're going to be a deal. And eventually, if you can do the right things to them, you will be creating a very phenomenal deal. And some of those things that you can look at is, look at this property over here that it's a 100-unit apartment community, and the property management company that's managing it today is not doing a good job. They're letting leases, lapse. When somebody moves out, they take a long time to move the next person in, and there's a whole bunch of dogs that are living there, but they're not collecting any dog rent. There's no dog park. And they're keeping it very messy in the yard. They're not mowing on time, and there's some deferred maintenance. Well, because this property management company isn't keeping their eye on the ball, the NOI or the net operating income based on that cap rate that you discussed a little bit earlier, the NOI is low. And when you calculate it against the cap rate, the real value of the property is terrible. So there's no value because there's no real income. So when we go there, some people would say, I would never buy this because look at it. It looks like a dump. Look at it. They've got all these dogs pooping everywhere. Nobody's cleaning it up. You know what I mean? Like you come in and it doesn't feel safe. And so some of the things that I'm discussing, like that my company has done and we'll continue to do, is we'll go into a property like this that just looks terrible, kind of like the fix and flip that a lot of your listeners are already used to. We go into that property and we say, you know, this smells like gold to us. So what we'll do is we'll purchase the property, we'll replace the manager, and we'll start putting cameras everywhere. We'll put up a fence, call it a dog park. We'll start enforcing people to clean up after themselves immediately. And then we'll also go and do an audit of every single unit. As we're walking through, we'll mark how many dogs and cats they have, and then we'll implement a pet fee and pet rent, and we'll just make sure that everybody's paying it. Just these few things that I mentioned, just the few that I've mentioned, and there's a ton more. There's laundry. There's everything under the sun. Just these will make the right people want to live there because it'll be safe, and so you're attracting the right tenants instead of, you know, drug dealers and things like that. And you're going to be able to raise your rents and collect more and collect on time and have people feel comfortable and tell their friends, you should also live here. And when that does that, instead of having a lot of vacancies and a very difficult time collecting rent, you'll be more likely to be collecting rent on time. People will be willing to pay a little bit more. And let's just say that all it was $50 a month. Let's just say $50 a month per unit is all we did different. And I know we can do a lot better than that, but just based on $50 times the 100 units that we have is $5,000 a month, and multiply that by 12 months, it's $60,000. And that doesn't sound like a whole ton, but if you divide it by the six cap that you said before, $60,000 divided by 0.06 is how you would do that. What I've just done with $50 is I've just made $1 million. It's insane, but if you divide that $60,000 by 0.06, that comes out to be, you know, $1 million. And all of a sudden you have the same property, but you can sell it to the next person for $1 million. It didn't cost you $1 million. You put in maybe $40,000 in cameras and upgrades. You didn't put $1 million of anything. So you really found a way to make a ton of money. And you can do this with all sorts of things like laundry and parking. Like in some of our communities, what we'll do is there's a bunch of parking and everybody's just parking wherever they want, when they want. And some of the cars are, that their license plates are too old when we come in, like they've already expired. And so what we'll do is we'll just bring in a tow company, and we'll warn all of the residents. We call them residents instead of tenants, by the way, but we'll warn all of the residents and let them know, hey, you know, if you have one of these vehicles, you've got 2 weeks, you know, to get it somewhere else, because they will tow this at your expense. And so you're starting to clean that up. Maybe you can restripe the parking lot. It's not very expensive. And then you can decide which parking spots are considered rock star parking spots. And then you can put a cheap, I mean, when I say cheap, I just mean an inexpensive, relatively inexpensive carport over top of some of those rock star spots, and then start charging $30 a month if you want to park underneath this thing and not have your, you know, be exposed to the elements. And a lot of people want that. They desire that. They pay for that. We've had friends who've also put storage units on their spots. There's all sorts of stuff. I mean, we could go we could get really granular in it, but just look at the next terrible looking property more as an opportunity, because there's a lot of cool things that you can do, and $1 million is not difficult to do in a property like this.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like the same thing that worked for me in my business, Adam, and that's like an obsessive amount of intense attention to what I have going on. And if what you have going on is a multifamily apartment complex, you can pay, you know, an immense attention to a lot of details that you just went through and mentioned, and it adds value, and it's little levers moving that thing forward in a big way. And I would venture to say that that's been something, you know, from Henry Ford, John Rockefeller, a ton of business magnates all throughout history. It's like intense, obsessive attention to many details and figuring out how to optimize and get it to work better. And that's a huge return. So one question that pops to mind is, did you keep or fire the property manager? And do you have a tip or system or some other method for handling property management that you typically bring in on an acquisition of, say, this 100-unit apartment complex?
You have really good questions, and I know you've been doing this for a long time, but I'm always impressed by the questions that you're asking, very intuitive. And so the answer to the one that you just asked is, are we firing the property manager, or are we keeping them? And how do we determine which we're going to do? And how do we determine what property management company we're going to use? So when we start looking at a market, we want to make sure that we're in the market that we're looking at, that it's a big enough market that it has the type of property managers that we look for. And so we do not self-manage. There's some crazy people out there that self-manage. It's not something we've ever done. We always hire professionals and let them take care of it. It's more than worth 3 or 4% of the rent to pay somebody else to be collecting the rent. When you're doing single family and you're paying 10%, maybe you could decide, should I do it or not? But when it's only 3% of the rent, and somebody knows the law, the right thing for you to do is to go ahead and hire a professional. I will argue that to the grave, unless you have, you know, several thousand units and you've been involved for a long time. You just ought to let somebody else take care of it for a while. And so how do you find them? So the first thing, like I said, is you look at a great market that that's big enough to support property management companies that do these types of deals, 100 unit, 200 unit, 400 unit apartment communities. And then you'll start vetting them and asking them about each other, and you'll also get a lot of referrals, and that's how you're going to select your property management company. More than 9 out of 10 times, we're always going to get rid of the property management company that's in place. The only reason that we wouldn't do that is if it's a property management company that we've already vetted, we already like, we're already working with. That's the only reason we would keep them in. But more than 9 out of 10 times, you're going to find the best property management company. You're going to vet them. And as you're doing your due diligence on the property, so you've got on bigger units like this, you have a lot longer for your due diligence. But you'll have your fiscal, financial due diligence. And then when you're doing your physical due diligence and inspections, the property management company is going to be involved in both. Okay. So this is a huge thing. You're like, what? The property manager is doing the due diligence for you. Yeah. When you get these bigger companies, not only that, but a lot of times they will bring in the plumber. They will bring in the HVAC. They will bring in the foundation person, somebody to scope all the sewer lines. They'll bring in the electrical and, you know, the roofer. And you'll walk every single unit with that team. So it'll be all of your natural team plus the team that you're going to be working with. One thing that you want to look for when you're looking at a property manager is if they've successfully implemented this business plan that you're going to be doing on this property, if they've done that within the neighborhood, and you would like to go and walk their other units before you have them going with you. But as you go through, you're making a note of every single unit, everything that you're seeing, and then you actually collaborate with your property management company as well as your contractors as you create the business plan and you determine how long it's going to take, because the property managers for these 200 unit apartment communities are extremely valuable because they have the experience in that area. They have the connections in that area, and they're going to understand vacancy rates and what it takes to lease up. And if you can do this thing called RUBS, and if you, which I guess I should tell more about RUBS since I mentioned it, ratio utility billing system. So it's a way to bill back your tenant. So some markets you can do that, some you can't. And if you have the right property manager, they're going to help you be able to do that. So I feel like I've been talking a lot on that, but there's a lot of details that you need the right property manager for sure, and they're going to save your life. You don't buy one of these without already hiring the property manager before you get started, or selecting them, I should say.
Makes sense. Great answer. Love the detail there. It's obvious that you have experience in this and you've thought this through and you've asked the tough questions and probably had experience lessons, which we're not going to touch on during this episode. But I have, before I ask you about capital and we get into meetups, podcasts, and things like that, I have one last question on the apartment stuff that is twofold. So which markets are you currently in? And maybe you could talk just a little bit about how you selected those markets that you went through this process and found these resources here. And do you like to stay in the markets that you're already in because you have those resources, or would you consider other markets if the right opportunity crosses your desk?
Great question. We have four cities that we're focused on right now, and just four cities. And It's important to share really how we got there, because in the beginning, as I told you when you asked how your criteria changes, a lot of our criteria that has changed is the market selection. For instance, when we were looking for that 8, 12, 16, when we were looking for that, we were chasing markets that didn't have the same fundamentals that really are going to give you the best end result. And so we were looking at, less desirable neighborhoods, because that's where we could find those cap rates that were a bit higher, because there was just less people that were driving the cap rates down, which means to drive the price up. And so we looked at a lot of different markets, and we weren't enjoying flying all the way to Connecticut. We weren't enjoying trying to get to different cities when we had several properties, and they were all over the freaking nation. They were all over. And so what we ended up doing is we said, you know, this is stupid. Like, this feels like we're just banging our head against a brick wall. This is giving us brain damage. It's not easy to handle properties all over. And so we said, we really just need to select what markets are going to be best. So that's where we decided, how are we going to have to figure this out? So we went to a lot of different websites. And if your listener wants to get those websites, they can email me, because four of the websites, my partner DJ Scruggs went through to take the entire nation down to 100 or so. And then four different websites that DJ didn't have, Manny went through and he took everything down to 100 or so. And they put their list together and had 135 in common that were the top markets in the entire nation based on these eight websites total. And from there, we started to look at metrics like 1% year-over-year population growth, at least 100,000 people in the market. We looked at job diversification, so basically saying that we don't want any single employer or even an industry to encompass more than 25% of the job force in an area, and ideally 20% or less. And so we looked and made sure that we could narrow it down to places that only qualified like that. and we started looking at places that had better schools. We wanted to look at places that had 7 out of 10 schools, 8 out of 10, 9, and 10 out of 10 schools. And so we started looking at that. And then we started to decide what places that we're looking at can we get to in a single plane flight from Denver. And so what we were trying to avoid is having to go to a layover or having to just take the entire day to get to the place where our property would be, like it was with the one that we had in Connecticut, and we still own it. So we looked at this, we looked at the housing prices, and we looked at how much are people making in the area. So we basically look at median income, median home price, and median rents. And it's really interesting. We wanted to make sure that it wasn't too inexpensive to live in a house compared to living in an apartment. So if it was more affordable to live in a house, that would be difficult on us if we're going to try to have a good occupancy rate in our building, right? And so we started looking at all of this, and I'll spare you some of the details, but if your listener is curious on the websites and which were the top 135 that we had come up with and how we whittled it down eventually down to just 4 markets, I've got all that written out, and I can send it to them if they email me. But here's the 4 that we selected after making carefully that we saw everything that we were really looking for. Reno, Nevada. We Oklahoma City. Let's see, Fayetteville, Arkansas. And Boise, Idaho. And one of the metrics that I'll mention is absorption rate. And what that means is, are they building a lot of apartment communities right now and not enough people are moving to the city? If they're doing that, then your vacancy is going to increase, because eventually as these units come online and they're available, the problem is going to be that there's going to be so much choice that the prices are going to be driven down, or you're just going to have vacancy. And so this is what we're looking for, is places where they're not overbuilding, but they still have those other metrics. Denver, for instance, would be an incredible market. It's an incredible market for the next 20 years, and it's going to be probably forever. But if you look at a 20-year picture, Denver, Colorado is phenomenal. But if you look at a 5-year picture, which is our hold time on many of these, there is a chance that we'll be losing money, that prices are going to come down, that there's going to be too many vacancies out there that are going to drive our prices down. So if we were looking at a 20-year picture, we'd be all over Denver. But because we're looking at a 5-year picture, we had to exclude the city that we even live in, even though it's a phenomenal market, if that makes any sense.
I love it. What a great answer to a very complicated, long-winded question. I appreciate that. I would love to dive into deep topic on a lot of the stuff you said there, but I'm going to, because of the clock here, I'm going to change gears a little bit. So we, the listeners, me, we all know that apartment investing requires an enormous amount of capital. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to assume that your large network, your ability to leverage Facebook, your ability to leverage meetups, in-person events, and also maybe the podcast might have some influence on your ability to raise capital. If I'm correct, then the question is, hey, would you mind sharing some of those same important little details that really move the needle for you in any one of those places? And if I'm not correct, and there's some other great abundant source of the capital that's funded your deals, then we could talk about that.
Yeah. So the first, you're right. I leverage working with other people. So my team's really the operator. And then there's a lot of people that want to invest passively and still get that great return, but they don't want to have to operate it or learn what we're doing or do all this market research that I just mentioned to you. And so what we do is we partner. We're the general partner. They'd be the limited partner. And we close on these deals. And you asked, how do we find the limited partners? Is it through the Facebook, the meetup, and the podcast? And so I'll share The first $4.2 million that I raised of private capital to go into my deals, the first $4.2 came just from my local meetup in Denver. And so the local meetup in Denver, we just meet at lunch, and that's really helped us. And I'll give you some tips to move the needle if you want to do a meetup as well. And then as far as the last couple of million that have come in, it's really coming in through the podcast. In fact, every day we tend to have 1 to 6 people just automatically opting in and saying, we want to invest with you, just because they've been listening to the podcast for a couple of years. And I know that's got to be the same with you and other people that are consistent, because passive investors, they want to see consistency. They absolutely want to know if you keep showing up in your podcast after 4 years or 2 years, you're obviously the type of person that's going to keep showing up in other areas of your life. And I know that that's one thing that's really benefited us. And because our podcast is about 2 years old, we're starting to get more and more people coming. And I'll give you one thing to move the needle on that as well. And of course, the Facebook has helped a lot. I will skip that, but just know that you, the listener, you're going to want to be successful in anything. I don't care if you're doing fix and flip or if you're selling door to door or whatever. If you're not telling people what you're doing, then it's going to be very difficult for you to be successful. So I just make it a habit on social media to just always tell people what I'm doing, and you should too. So the one thing that I'll say to move the needle on your meetup group is how you market the meetup group. That's a huge, huge, huge deal. Most everybody else who has a meetup group, they just put it on meetup.com. That's the only place. But what I'll do is I'll call people on the phone and say, this week we're going to be talking about this, and it'd be very valuable to you. So I'm actually soliciting call by call, individual by individual, but in a very genuine way. I think this meeting will help you, or you're going to meet the right person for your business. You should come. And that, just that little thing where you're actually speaking to somebody directly, it goes a long, long way compared to if they just saw that it was there. If they saw that it was there, they might even want to go there. They may even want to come to the meetup, and they may even plan to come to the meetup. But when they have kids and work and all these other things in their life, when it starts coming closer to the meetup, they let go. But if you gave them a individual call and said, you know, this one, you can't miss, you got to grab your babysitter now, it's a night and day. And that's really what put my meetup to where it is. It's the top one meetup in Colorado. And it really came from the way that I marketed it. So if you're going to do it, don't just put it on meetup.com. Also call your friends, let them know when it applies to them that they ought to be there. And then, on the podcast, there's many things that really will move your needle. Consistency will absolutely move the needle, but I'm going to give you just a hack. If you don't have a podcast today, I just give you like one quick hack that I give to my students, and all of them have a top 1% podcast. So take this and know that it's worth gold. If you're launching a podcast and you do the same thing that I told you with the meetup, and as you're launching it, you actually call your friends and your family, and here's your pitch, and it's a perfect pitch. Write it down. Hey, John, the reason I'm calling you today is because I need just a couple of people that I trust to give me a rating and review to this podcast that I just started. And so that's really how you'll open it up. And if you can get more than 100 ratings and reviews, you'll already be in the 0.6 percentile. So if you didn't already know this, less than 0.6% of podcasts out there have more than 100 reviews. So if you can do this in the beginning, now it doesn't work as well later on because of the algorithms for for the iTunes algorithm. So in the first few weeks, if you're able to get it up to that 100 plus, then iTunes is going to go crazy. iTunes is going to freak out, and they're going to be like, wow, what's different about this person compared to everyone else? And what they're going to do is they're actually going to start putting your podcast in the top 10 in multiple categories. And usually that includes the new and noteworthy category, which they start doing your advertisement for you. And so I have a lot more hacks, but this is one that if you don't yet have a podcast and you're thinking about starting one, make sure that you call your friends and family and use this. I just need a couple of people that I trust to give me a rating and review today. And then walk them through how to do it, and your podcast will be thrown ahead of some people that have had a podcast for 1, 2, 3, or 4 years. And that'll all happen within the first few weeks because you've hacked into the algorithm and made iTunes realize that you're something special.
Great tips. I wish I would have had that a couple years ago when I first started my own podcast. I really like what you talked about with the phone call invite. So we do meetups in Atlanta, Philly, and Chicago. We don't do them every month like we did in the past. It's a big event. It's kind of, you know, it's a push for us. And we genuinely do it only as a value add for the people that are in our network, Adam. So it's not like we're actively raising money from the meetup. It's a place where we've generally used our meetup to source the 14 or so partners that are in my company right now. You know, so it's mostly been a meeting people who we end up doing business with. And of course we buy deals and do some deals with people. It's focused on single family stuff, but what you just mentioned, I want to put an underline when it comes to the phone call invites. I have done, I don't know, 100 plus meetups in my whole thing. And I witnessed exactly that, the pull of a person's life and the intention of wanting to go to the meetup. I'm sure everyone listening to the call has intended on going, oh, I'm going to go to the networking event. And then the time comes and dinner's on the table and whatever it is, and we don't go. But I want to also highlight, are there any, you know, high value individuals or contacts? These are people that you've like identified that perhaps you really want to be doing business with. And if I'm flipping houses, that person might be somebody who's in my marketplace who's like a high volume wholesaler. And I want to see them and I want FaceTime with them. And sometimes getting them out to that meetup, maybe making that phone call, hey, I'm going to see you there. And you create that expectation from the other party and you get them there. So yeah, call the friends and call the people that you're that you know, but you know, also perhaps seeing who is it that I really want to make sure I'm there and spending some face time with, and figuring out who are those like high value individuals that I really want to make sure I see at that event. I've used my own meetup, and then I'll close with this and turn it back over to you. But I've used my own meetup as a way to kind of network with, you know, higher caliber individuals than myself as I was climbing my way up to where we're at right now. And what I mean by that is, you know, I would feature them. They would be the guest speaker. We'd give them the opportunity to have the microphone, give them an hour, what have you. It was valuable for the group, and we came up with topics that were relevant for the people who were going to attend. But not only that, the person who has spoken in front of the room, these are the kind of people now, if I need to get a hold of them, I can get them on the phone, you know, because it was a way for me to build the relationship and build by offering something of value by offering like our group and our network for them to come and speak. But I digress. So I want to wrap up with a couple questions here. Adam, first, book recommendations, maybe like one for someone maybe a little newer in the business, and maybe like a book recommendation that you'd make to me who's been around for, you know, 13 or so years and done a few deals.
Perfect. Well, I got really into Audible recently, and I've been listening to a ton of books, and I find a lot of incredible value out of most of them. It's changing my world because I'm dyslexic. I used to not read. But that first book that I read, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, back in 2007, I really believe if there is a listener that hasn't yet read it, they ought to. And so I just want to give that plug. Everybody else is rolling their eyes. They're saying, I've heard this many, many times. But hey, if you're somebody who's never read that book, you really ought to pull that book out, find that book and go all the way through it. It will change the way that you look at money. The second book that I want to discuss is, it's just a friend of mine. His name is Joe Fairless, and he wrote an extremely comprehensive apartment investing guide. And it's hundreds of pages. I think it's like 400 pages. And it can be a bit overwhelming. I just want to encourage you. It's a $40 or $50 book. But if you want to do this business that I'm doing, Joe shares a lot of the secret strategies that I use and I teach my clients in that book for just $40 or $50. And it will teach you how to market, how to raise money, how to find the deal, how to manage the deal, how to underwrite deals, how to find partners, and everything else that you could think of or you're concerned about in getting into these bigger deals. It's called Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book by Joe Fairless and Theo Hicks. So Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book by Joe Fairless and Theo Hicks. Highly recommend it.
Nice. And we've had Joe on the show here, I think, a couple times, and I've been on his show. I'll make sure I link to the his episodes if you go on and check in the show notes here. Great books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, almost every guest. I mean, it's like a majority of the guests are making that suggestion. So, yeah, another underline. If you haven't read that yet, humongous mindset shift, great place to start. I wrote down Best Ever Apartment Syndication for myself here. I'll make sure I grab that. If you could, Adam, if you could go back to 2008, just starting off in real estate, finally embraced your dad's wisdom he had been trying to spoon feed for so many years, kind of tasted like Brussels sprouts or something, right? But if you could go back to 2008 and give yourself the crown jewel of wisdom, knowing what you know now, what would that be?
I feel like the real true jewel that I would share is that you need to find a mentor. You absolutely just need to find somebody to align with that's been there for 20 or 30 years that can help you to get rid of those 20 or 30 years of headaches and go straight into the success part. So that's the really, I mean, I could share a lot of different things, but if you're wanting to get into a business that you don't yet understand, the best thing you can do is align with a good mentor that has had a lot of experience that can really help you streamline your success.
I would underline that advice. And as we were recording our episode here together today, Adam, I thought to myself, I said, wow, I've had quite a few high volume apartment guests on the show. And we've talked about a lot of different, you know, little nuggets and little jewels. And then the thought occurred to me, I'm like, man, if I go buy 100 or 150 or whatever, a large apartment complex, and I syndicate the money to do this, I'm not going to remember, even though I took the notes, even though I listened to the episode and I've interviewed a number of guests with, you know, a high level of apartment investing knowledge and experience. I'm not going to remember it because the timing is so important to implement each of these little nuggets when you're doing your deals. And the value of the mentor really comes in at each step of the way because they recognize the timing, whereas the person who hasn't had the experience yet to apply the timing to the knowledge has a page of notes, but the timing of all that implementation is missing. So I had the thought, I'm making a note that if I do decide to buy a couple hundred units, I am probably going to be giving you a call. So anyway, if any of our guests, Adam, want to get some more information about you, your company, et cetera, do you have somewhere they can go to get more info?
Of course. Yeah, the best way that if you want to connect with me or see what my business is doing, what deals we've closed, talk about my coaching, listen to my podcast, whatever. There's one hub that you can go to get it all. And it's realbluespruce.com. I'm up here in Conifer, Colorado, where there's the blue spruce tree all over. And we're the real blue spruce. So just go to realbluespruce.com.
Nice. Exciting episode. I got a ton of pages of good notes here. I appreciate you closing the door, blocking the distractions out, and sharing so generously of your wisdom, Adam. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for your time. I love what you're doing, and your questions are phenomenal. I got to learn your strategies. You're doing good stuff.
Appreciate it. And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Coming up next, Rod Khalif of the Lifetime Cash Flow through a Real Estate Investing Show, joins us to discuss how he lost $50 million and then built back up to a few thousand units. It is a good one that you will not want to miss. Dealmakers, I have cash for you if you've got a deal. I buy houses and apartment complex deals in Atlanta, Chicago, and Philadelphia, anywhere 2-hour radius from those cities. So if you have a deal in that geographical area, please contact me directly using the form at reidiamonds.com. You could always email me back if you've got my email address, and I'll be sure to respond. Accredited investors are currently earning double-digit returns investing passively in real estate. If you are interested in that, go to fundrehabdeals.com now to check it out. That concludes this episode. Thank you again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. Catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.